jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.
Hello, I'm Julian Bovell, and welcome back to the New Model Advisors Show. Today, we're joined by Tom Selby, Director of Public Policy at AJ Bell. Tom, thanks very much for joining me. How are you?
Good to be here. Yep, fine, thanks. Yeah, exhausted, but fine.
Great to have you. And yeah, we were just talking beforehand. It's been a long old slog, the budget, just a week to go. Are you excited for it to be all to be over then?
I'm excited to get some facts rather than rumour and speculation. I mean, every budget that I've ever covered in the last 15 years has been characterised by lots of rumour and speculation, particularly around pensions and taxation and things like that. But I think the combination of the extra time period we've had here, the fact that we've got a new government that's been really clear that it's got quite a difficult fiscal position, and the tax locks that they put in place on national insurance, VAT, and an income tax means that all of that speculation has been accentuated, shall we say. It's been pretty relentless, and I think it'll be good just to get some actual facts on the table so we can start to figure out exactly what the direction this government's going to be.
Yeah, do you think there'll be part of this new government administration that regret both the messaging that they initially entered government with about the 22 billion fiscal black hole, and then also the lack of sort of, I suppose, presence that they had to go with the winter fuel payment cuts and other messaging, and also leaving the budget so long as well?
I certainly think they've been surprised at the level of reaction to the winter fuel payment decision. I think there could have been a bit more rolling of the pitch of that particular call. I think when you're talking about hitting older people and taking money away from older people, it's always quite difficult. And I think they probably underestimated the challenges that exist around getting people to claim pension credit. So to get the winter fuel payment now, you'll need to claim pension benefit credit or other types of benefits. And I think that the fact that has been so poorly claimed over the years, and the government doesn't really have a plan in place to make sure more people claim other than telling more people about it, means that it's really difficult. I think they've known what they're doing in terms of setting a very kind of negative table and bringing out the big numbers. It's a kind of a classic political playbook to say, actually,
the last
lot of put us in a real mess, and we're going to have to fix that mess. So they'd probably say that, you know, you'll know in 3 or 4 years' time whether that strategy's worked or not. But it has been pretty gloomy, and maybe they slightly overdid it on the gloom in the first few weeks.
Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves putting all their eggs in the growth basket, I suppose, and perhaps there might be some surprises next week that we're not expecting, that haven't been reported on, or do you think everything that might be coming has been?
I think it's really hard to say at this stage. I think they've got themselves in a bit of a bind in terms of, as I said, they've had the promise not to touch income tax, national insurance or VAT rates. They've also said that they're going to prioritise wealth creation, and they've also said they're going to prioritise economic growth. Now, it's quite hard to raise £40 billion in year without fundamentally undermining one of those pledges. And they've said, of course, they're not going to hit working people, which I think has been one of the most troublesome phrases that the Labour Party's come out with, and this government said that it's going to commit to.
Well, the minister the other day couldn't declare whether somebody on £100,000 or more was a working person.
It's very ill-defined, and most of the rumoured tax increases that are coming down the track, if some of the rumours, I'm sure, will be true. So if you think about things like applying national insurance to employer pension contributions, doesn't hurt workers directly, but the idea that increasing costs on businesses by somewhere between £10 and £15 billion isn't going to trickle down into people getting smaller pensions or less high pay increases is nonsense. Clearly, that is going to have an impact on working people. And I think that phrase, working people, has been a real challenge for them, because it is fairly ill-defined. And by any definition of working people, someone who works and pays taxes, even changes to capital gains tax will affect a working person who owns shares. So to say that you're going to protect working people in a budget where you're going to raise £40 billion, I think is incredibly challenging, if not impossible.
Yeah, and I mean, particularly around, people might find the messaging around national insurance quite difficult when they said that it wasn't clear whether they explicitly said whether they would raise it on companies either as well. Where else do you think their messaging has been slightly confused in the run-up to this budget? Do you think they've allowed speculation to spiral too much? I mean, tax-free lump sum tax-free cash is probably the big one.
Yeah, so I think it is important to say that there is always rumour and speculation ahead of every single budget, but because of that set of factors that I talked about earlier, it's been particularly pronounced this time around. I've got some sympathy with them. So the new Chancellor has to come in, has to look at the books, has to come up with a budget for the entire economy. So this isn't obviously just about pensions and investments and savings. It's about an entire economy. I think a large amount of their focus was on planning reforms and things like that at the start. So in a way, this kind of rumour and speculation is inevitable. I think that they've got themselves into a position where they've ruled out lots of tax increases, which has made it harder. They didn't have to do that. They felt they needed to do that to win the election. If they hadn't done that, then perhaps things would have been a bit simpler. What we've been emphasising ahead of this budget is that we need that uncertainty to end from the 30th of October. So if the Chancellor, and it's a big if because we don't know what's going to be in the budget, but if the Chancellor isn't going to do anything on tax-free cash, and we think that's both problematic, won't raise much money, and is also going to be hugely controversial and complicated, if they're not going to do that, and if they're not going to make fundamental reforms to pensions tax relief, which again, I think would be problematic, you certainly wouldn't be able to do that overnight, and I think it raised problems with the public sector. If the government's come to that decision, then it's got an opportunity, rather than just letting this slide and letting us get to the next budget and going through this all again, to say, actually, we want to support people who are saving for retirement. We want to make sure it's easier for advisors to focus on the things that they want to be focusing on, which isn't dealing with clients reacting to rumour and speculation, and say, we're not going to change pensions tax relief fundamentally, and we're not going to lower tax-free cash from the current level, at least for the course of this parliament. I think if the government's come to the decision it's not going to change tax relief or tax-free cash, and I think that's actually quite a simple thing for them to do, because I don't think they would look at those things for the rest of this parliament anyway. And it'd give them an opportunity, with all the winter fuel payment stuff, to say, actually, we are on the side of people who are hardworking, who are saving for retirement. We've got automatic enrolment for you at the start. We're going to deliver tax stability in the middle. And then we've got the triple lock on the state pension at the end. That's actually a government that's supporting people throughout their working lives. So, as I say, I think it is inevitable, given where we are at the moment, that this speculation was just going to happen. I'm not sure there was much the government could have done about that. There is something they can do about it on October 30th, and we're hoping that they will.
What are AJ Bell's clients saying to sort of your advisors? What are they saying when they call up the help centres about, particularly about tax-free lump sum, but also other areas that they're perhaps worried about?
Yeah, there's been a lot of worry and concern. I think that's fair to say. We surveyed some of our advisor customers around their experiences ahead of the budget. I think the figure was 99%, so essentially 100% of advisors had seen an increase in client queries as a result of the budget. Now, you might expect that before every budget to an extent, but I think it has been more pronounced this time around. The vast majority of those were in relation to tax-free cash. And I absolutely get it from the position of a client, from the position of an ordinary investor. The level of uncertainty that we see, the number of stories that there are out there, the financial position the government's in, lots of people might just think, you know what, I want to cut and run. And I think if you're in the position where you're approaching the point, say with tax-free cash, where you're going to take your tax-free cash anyway in the next couple of years, then it might not be the biggest deal in the world. You might be able to take that money, use your ISA allowance, put it in other places, and actually the impact on you as an individual might not be too bad. But if you've got people who are rushing to take their tax-free cash a decade before retirement based on panic and fear, which isn't ideal, and if those people are then going to take it and just shove it in a bank account, receiving little or no interest, or they've got no plans for the money whatsoever, then there's some real consumer harms that can come out of that. So it's you know, there is clearly some fear amongst the general public about this. I think it's understandable fear, and it's why we really think the government needs to get on top of this now and say that we're not going to have this repeat of people worrying about their pensions, which I think one of the things that is often missed in kind of the public debate around pensions is that people are having to make a really big financial decision there. Yes, there are tax incentives, but if you're in, you know, your 30s, then you're locking your money up for 20, 25 years. That's a significant commitment from you to save for your retirement. And it seems to me that the very least the government could do is stick to its side of the bargain and say, actually, the goalpost won't be moved partway through your retirement savings journey, and will remove the uncertainty that you feel, particularly around those tax rules, so that you know you can put your money in a pension and the government's going to be good on its promise. So I don't think it's too much to ask that the government deliver a bit of stability in this area, particularly when that was one of the watchwords of the Labour Party heading into the election. We're going to deliver stability for people. I'd argue that retirement savers and retirees need stability more than anyone, and the government's not got an opportunity to deliver that.
Yeah. Before we came into the studio, we were sort of talking about the extensive speculation. Mm. And there were reports this morning about a public sector carve out for national insurance employer pension contributions. What is your view on that? And how will the private sector, I suppose, react? Because they're going to have to foot a £15.4 billion bill.
Yeah, I think that will stick in the craw for a lot of people if that is what's going to happen. I think the position that the government is in is when you look at, you know, unfunded public sector pension schemes, if the government's saying it wants to protect the overall budgets of the NHS, of education, of other parts of the public realm, then applying a tax which increases their costs by, say, £5 billion means that one way or another they're going to have to put that money back in, because it's the government's made commitments that funding commitments to the NHS and others. So I think it's probably one of those things that on the face of it doesn't look great. It feels like the public sector is getting a kind of get out of jail free card, whereas the private sector is having to foot the bill, particularly when you consider that public sector pensions are far more generous than the average private sector pension. Then I don't think it will play particularly well, but I think it's an inevitable consequence of the spending decisions that the government's made around the public sector, but it doesn't feel particularly fair.
Quite a lot of talk, I suppose, this week from industry professionals, certainly who I speak to, saying that the government needs to be wary about eroding trust in pensions. Is that something that people should genuinely be worried about, or is that just something that us industry figures who work in the pensions industry are worried about?
Well, it's really important. I think that automatic enrolment and some of the other reforms around value for money that we've seen in the last kind of decade or so have set a foundation where people are starting to save more for retirement. They're generally not saving enough, but people are getting automatic enrolled into pensions. There haven't been any particular scandals around that, which we've seen historically around pensions. So I think trust is a really fragile thing, and if people, and it is clear that some people, just by the behaviour that we've seen across the pensions industry, if people feel that they can't trust the government not to mess with their pensions, even if they're starting to build trust in the pensions industry to look after their retirement pots, if they think the government's going to change things partway through, then I think that is a really big problem. And I come back to the fact that people are making significant long-term commitments to locking their money away. We've also got a government that's saying it wants to use some of that money to invest in the UK and productive assets. So to my mind, for the government to hold up its side of the bargain, it needs to say, we're going to keep the rules the same and deliver some stability for you, particularly if they're going to, you know, shift asset allocations within workplace schemes in particular, and say, you know, we're going to be putting more of members' hard-earned money into UK companies or into private equity vehicles.
Yeah, we've spoken, you and I, previously about the stories around potentially mandating investment in the UK. You have quite strong views on that.
I'm not a fan. I personally think that investment decisions should be left to the trustees of workplace pension schemes. They've got a fiduciary duty to deliver good outcomes for members, and one of those key outcomes will be maximising your income in retirement. Now, if there is a legitimate investment case for investing more in private equity or investing more in UK companies, then absolutely fine. But it should be for those schemes to make a decision that's right for their members. My real concern is this conflation of government aims with the aims of members. And I think the way that the Treasury has talked about some of these reforms isn't ideal. So suggesting that people are going to end up with bigger pensions as a result of an increased allocation to private equity and UK equities. Well, that might happen, but it might not. And any FCA-regulated company that was going out saying that would rightly be hauled over the coals. So I just think we need to be careful if we're going to move towards a world where, you know, governments are in charge of asset allocation, that, or at least mandating a certain level of allocation to certain assets, that the member isn't completely lost in all this and it's kind of like being treated as though it's the government's money, because it's not. It's members' money and it needs to
that
be treated carefully.
That people put in from the age of 25,
exactly.
or whenever. Having you here, Tom, it would be remiss for me not to ask, staying on the topic of controversial British investments, the British ISA, that's for the scrap heap now, presumably, we think.
I hope so, yeah.
You hope so, yeah.
I mean, we were kind of strong opponents of the idea of the British ISA, not because we don't understand that UK capital markets are struggling and that the government's got a difficult problem there and it wants to solve it. Obviously, the UK ISA was an idea of the previous government. But it was just a cack-handed idea that hadn't been properly thought through, wouldn't have achieved any of the aims that the government was hoping to achieve, and would have added complexity to what is already quite a complex ISA system already. So it felt like an idea that was delivered by a government in its death throes.
Yeah. We're reaching for a final.
Yeah, reaching for anything, just, you know, throwing enough at the wall and hoping that it sticks. And I think a new government with a fresh mandate and a decent period of time to address, you know, some of the fundamental problems that mean perhaps that people don't want to invest in the UK shouldn't be going down the road of the UK ISA or the British ISA. And I think that's a, you know, it kind of comes back to the idea of mandating asset allocations. To my mind, the government's focus should be on making the UK a place where international investors want to put their money. If that's your focus, then pursue reforms, regulatory planning, whatever it needs to be, to make people want to put their money there. Don't just strong arm people's money into the UK with a few incentives or by mandating without fixing the fundamental issues. If you want money in the UK, then make people want to put their money here. Don't force UK citizens to put their money here when it might be better served elsewhere.
Yeah, so going forward, I suppose, then sort of post-budget and into the sort of 2-3 year strategy where they'll hope to see some of this growth perhaps. What do you think Labour's strategy should be sort of fiscally, and what sort of message should they be talking up when it comes to UK? So big question.
Yeah, no, big question. I think some of the things that they're looking to do, this isn't my area of expertise, but around planning reform to me seems like the right thing to be doing. So if we need, if we need the economy to go gangbusters, then we need to be able to build things. If people need homes, then we need to be able to build things as well. I think there are kind of tax reforms that the government could look at as well to make the UK a more attractive place. I mean, a small one would be the application of stamp duty on share sales. So that makes us non-competitive with our international counterparts, so the fact that there's a stamp duty on UK shares. I think if they wanted to send a signal that actually we're trying to attract money into UK companies, then removing the tax that our government places on those companies would seem to me to be a sensible place to start. But I think this government came in with partly on a mandate of delivering stability for people across the board. And I think actually if we do move towards a world where things feel more stable, politically, where the tax system is more stable. I think there's going to be challenges in the budget, as I said, in that a lot of the measures that have been talked about are going to be anti-growth by their very nature. But if the general direction of travel is actually we support growth and we support wealth creation, and over time we'll look to deliver reforms which make it easier for people to do business here, then that'll take us some way there. But it's worth remembering that the UK economy hasn't really grown for about 15 years. It's an incredibly difficult problem to solve. And I think that's why, you know, Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves are saying we need at least a decade to do this, because it's going to be really hard and there are no kind of easy, quick fixes.
And everyone will hope that most of the bad news is coming in a week and then it's all sunlit uplands from then.
We'll see. I think they're already rolling the pitch for a few more years of difficult decisions before then.
Perhaps, yeah. Other sort of budget areas then, CGT, Keir Starmer, I think, did rule out a rise to 39%. That was presumably sensible. Yeah. I mean, 33 to 39% would really put us out there.
I think capital gains tax looks like one of the easier of the very difficult levers for the government to pull. It'll be something that, you know, is seen as clearly hitting, you know, share owners who by and large will tend to be a bit wealthier. I think there'll be a balancing act to be for the government to do there, between, you know, raising enough revenue but not putting people off owning shares. That's going to be quite challenging for them. But there may also be a kind of political ruse here, in that they, you know, if they announce, we don't know whether the increase in capital gains tax rates is going to happen immediately or it will happen in April. But I think the very rumour that the government is going to increase capital gains tax rates has unsurprisingly seen lots of people selling down their assets ahead of the budget, which has raised money for the government in that period of time. And if they announce a moderate increase in the rate, but say that's going to apply from April, then actually their tax receipts might go up significantly more, because people are looking to get ahead of that and sell their shares. It comes back to that point that everything that they're looking to do here is probably going to go against one of their key commitments. Yeah. And I think, you know, that they want to get more people investing, they want to encourage wealth creation, and clearly increasing CGT rates does the opposite of that. But they're in the world of looking for least worst solutions, and I think a moderate increase in the CGT rate is probably in that bucket.
Well, it was just CGT, I suppose, was the one that throughout the election and then post election, those first few weeks, everyone thought that would be the one, because they'd ruled out income tax, VAT, national insurance on working people, and then also wealth taxes as well. They said that they wouldn't go anywhere near.
Yeah, so you're down to a fairly narrow group of things that the government can go for that are going to move the dial. And I think CGT clearly falls into the bracket of something that you could justifiably increase. But again, it's just the balancing act of increasing it to a level which isn't going to completely put people off, you know, investing in and making sensible decisions.
I mean, hosting investment summits in London, despite certain ministers perhaps throwing their viability into doubt, and then cut it, and then rising CGT wouldn't chime with their message, really, would it?
Yeah. It's an incredibly, the more you talk about it, the more you realise just how tricky a position they've got themselves into.
Well, I keep on looking at it from the perspective of the LTA changes in March, and this government has now potentially got that, well, not that, but three times as much difficulty in sort of whether they row back on the tax changes or how they implement them.
On the lifetime allowance changes?
Or as in just comparing it to the complexity of the lifetime allowance changes.
Yeah.
They could have similar complexities in other areas.
That's certainly when you come to things like pensions, then there's, if you look to do something on, for example, tax-free cash, then you're either going to do it in a way that is brutally unfair. So you're going to say, we're just going to reduce the maximum allowance to, say, £100,000. And if you've got 200 grand already, screw you, you get 100 grand, which would feel like a massive break in the social contract to me, and would leave people massively up in arms.
Really,
you're going to create a really complicated protection regime for people to make sure that no one's negatively impacted retrospectively by it. So if you go down that road, A, it's more complexity in what's already quite a complex set of pension tax rules, and B, you're not going to raise a huge amount of cash by doing it, because people who already have more than the lower level, say £100,000, will be protected from that. And people who are taking tax-free cash after that point will just take the new lower amount and will likely drip feed the amount of extra income they take over time. So the government will get a bit more money, but it will take decades for that to accrue. They're not going to get a big fast hit of, you know, £20 billion in year from that reform. It's going to take ages. So for that reason and others, I think it's quite an unattractive one for the government to pursue.
Yeah, fantastic. Tom Selby, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Yeah, you deserve a big sleep after the budget is done next week. Yeah.
From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.